song, doing a good job.
The call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel, serving the Charlottesville area with home heating oil and propane and famous Exxon gasoline. The wake-up call is also brought to you by The Hoof, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news on Newsstands Thursday. Now your host, Rick Moore.
And I suppose I should probably turn my microphone on so I can say good morning, everybody. It might possibly be an hour later than you think it is. You should have set your clocks back last night. So it is indeed 11 o'clock here on the first Sunday in November, which in this case makes it the first Sunday just before the November election, which is why we should welcome our guest, Professor Sid Milkus. How are you, sir?
Good. How are you, Rick?
I'm well, thank you. Sounds a good volume. I appreciate you helping me with that. We're all set here on Sunday morning wake-up call. Let me give a shout-out to Lovingston's 94.7. And you know what? I wasn't here or I wasn't hosting last week. If you were listening to Sean McCord do the show on the Virginia Film Festival, currently ongoing, go see something this afternoon. I need to give a shout-out to my grandmother, Alma Moore, turned 89.
God bless her.
Just at the end of October. Still driving, still functioning quite well. It's amazing the age at which people have progressed to still being capable of doing their own things. It really is. I'm constantly hearing stories about a friend whose father turned 99 and who still goes down to the recording for Blind and Dyslexic, doing help down there with their medical production. It really is. So hopefully everyone is having a great day. It's certainly nice outside. Let me thank the folks at Dixon Disposal for allowing us to be here today. Dixon reminds you that you can reduce your household garbage by purchasing products with reuse and recycling in mind. Small changes in your lifestyle can keep our planet green for years to come. With Dixon, there isn't any sorting or separating. You can put your trash in one can, and they do the rest. Dixon also offers single-stream recycling. For more information, online, DixonDisposal.com. Dial them up, 434-978-2111. All right, our guest today, Professor Sidney Milkus from UVA's Department of Politics, Director of Democracy and Governance Studies at Miller Center of Public Affairs. Can you actually get all that on one business card?
I can. It's really packed, though.
Small font?
Very small font.
Can you actually read that on the business card?
No.
All
but right. We have great graphics.
All right. So we are going to be talking about politics today with Professor Milkus. All types. We're going to be talking about some trends, some history of politics. I wanted to do something a little different today than just bringing someone in here to talk about this race and that race and another race and who might win and why. We are going to be talking about some history of politics. We will be getting into race. I do want to talk about Kane versus George Allen, an upcoming election. And I want to talk about some of the GOP hopefuls and some of the things that currently are important to Professor Obama so that he can run his race again in 2012. Actually, let's start with that. We have a current president who at this point seems to have started his race for president for 2012. It seems like the elections have moved back to an earlier and earlier and earlier time. And it's not just the race because of what the states are doing. Some of the states have moved back their primaries to an earlier and earlier and earlier time. Is this new history in the making?
It's not entirely new, Rick. There's in a sense been a permanent campaign since the late 60s, early 70s, when the media really began to have a saturating effect on politics. Now, media has been important in American politics since the beginning of the 20th century, but with the advent of television and the internet and social media, there's no break from politics now. So that has tended to make politics and campaigning permanent. And there used to be a bit more of a line between campaigning and governing, but that line has been blurred considerably in the last couple of decades. And I think you're right; it's kind of intensified in recent years.
Someone asked me in the not-too-distant past what was the cause for this. And I said, I blame Ted Turner. Ted Turner brought about WTBS and sort of created the cable, the 24-hour issue, so the TV stations don't go to bed at whenever it was, one in the morning, two in the morning, you know, displaying the flag. And is there, can you find sort of the trigger that created this?
Yeah. Well, I love to blame Ted Turner for things because this is this has nothing to do with politics, but I'm from Philadelphia and I hate the Braves. so I'm down with blaming Ted Turner for anything. But I think cable television, the internet, not only do we get saturated coverage of politics, Rick, but the media has gotten more partisan. So if you think of just CNN and Fox News, these are not just media outlets. These are also media outlets we associate with a certain kind of politics. So, for example, a lot of the Republican primary contest is not taking place with organization on the ground, so to speak, but through Fox News. A lot of campaigning, a lot of trial balloons are being conveyed through a cable television station. That's a bit of a change for a long time. Let's say between the 1940s and when Ted Turner messed everything up, the media at least ostensibly attempted to be nonpartisan. But with the explosion of cable television and now with social media and blogging, it's become quite partisan, very much like the partisan press that was very strong at the end of the 19th century.
Our guest today, Professor Sidney Milkus from UVA's Department of Politics. Several books out there, The American Presidency, Origins and Development, Presidential Greatness. We're going to be talking specifically about one of the newer books, Theodore Roosevelt and the Progressive Party. And so if you'd like to talk about Ted Turner in your next book, you're welcome to include me in the thank you area. But as we get back to the more partisan news, you mentioned something back to the 60s. We talked about the increase in news itself with politics. Mm-hmm. Can you blame the partisan problem on Fox News? Do you need to go to particular incident there, particular people, or is that just where we've gone as a culture?
Yeah, I don't think you can say that it's all attributable to the media. There was a kind of a political earthquake that took place in the 60s that really fragmented the country. Vietnam War, the civil rights movement, the reaction to those events really divided the country between conservatives and liberals in a way that had not been the case since the 1930s. And Rick, it wasn't just politics, and I think your term culture is well put. There was a deep cultural divide that developed in the 60s. And I think things like television and cable news and the internet have intensified and amplified that. But it's always hard to determine cause and effect in political science. It's not an exact science. So, but I think there's a lot of factors that grow out of the 60s and 70s that have made us a much more divided country. And the media certainly plays its part by amplifying these political and cultural differences that have their origins, I think, in events like the Vietnam War and the civil rights movement.
Well, here we are in a time where we have several wars that are found good or bad, sort of in a divided manner across our country, whether you want to focus on the war in Iraq or Afghanistan. And currently, at least so far in the last several months of 2011, we have another issue with the Occupy Wall Street and how that has progressed across our country, which also seems to have a division as to whether or not you approve or disapprove of what's going on. Is this another time where we splinter even more, maybe into smaller fragments, or maybe this is the issue and the time that brings us back?
Back
together, maybe not completely, but a little bit.
Yeah, that's very optimistic. I don't see any trends bringing us back together. Of course, I could be wrong about that, but right now, when one looks at all the polls, One has to be rather pessimistic about forming a strong consensus in American politics. Something that used to be called the vital center of the country. I'm fascinated by the Occupy Wall Street movement. I think the Tea Party movement is also very interesting. And to me, what they suggest or symbolize is kind of an amplification and an intensifying of a country that's divided, that in a way that is rare in American politics, we're having a fundamental conflict over what direction the country should take. We've had these before in the 30s and the 60s, but it seems now, because of the saturated politics you started with at the beginning of our discussion, it's amplified and intensified a way that really brings it home to most Americans in a way that probably wasn't true previously.
Well, you talk about the vital center. Actually, let me step back a second. As a professor of politics, do you actually believe in polls?
That's a loaded question. We're live, right?
Yes, we are. It wasn't meant to be a loaded question, but people always say that polls don't really tell you anything except who you spoke to.
Yeah. I'm not a pollster. I'm not somebody who spends all my time studying polls. As you very kindly pointed out, I like to write about history. Safer to write about history than base your writing on polls. I think polls are very fascinating snapshots. They give us a sense of where we are at the moment. One has to take them with a grain of salt, but they're done in a fairly careful way so that we can get a rough estimate from them about where things stand. So, you know, I'm sort of agnostic. This is a weak-kneed answer. I'm sort of agnostic about polls. One shouldn't be obsessed with them, and I think too many of our politicians become obsessed with them. On the other hand, it's important to know where the American people stand at the moment. You don't want to ignore them.
Our guest today, Professor Sidney Milkus from the University of Virginia. We are talking about politics, the Sunday before Election Day. And let me give a shout-out to Blue Ridge Mountain Sports for allowing us to be here. Support from WNRN comes from Blue Ridge Mountain Sports, where your happiness is their priority. At Blue Ridge, you can return gear and apparel purchases at any time for any reason. Blue Ridge Mountain Sports is at Barracks Road here in Charlottesville. They have three locations in Richmond. For more store information, it's brms.com. Professor Milkus, during the previous minute or so, you talked about the vital center, sort of in between mentioning Occupy Wall Street and the Tea Party. Many people have said that the Tea Party and the Occupy Wall Street movement are really sort of discussing the same problem, which is the people in the vital center are screwing everybody else. Is that something that maybe a better word choice that you might agree with in a historical manner?
Yeah. Well, by vital center, I didn't mean what's gone on in Washington and what we used to call in the 60s, Rick, the establishment. I wasn't referring to that. But vital center, this is a term that the name of a book by a very famous historian named Arthur Schlesinger, Jr., to describe the state of the country in the 30s and 40s when there was a great deal of consensus in the country about the New Deal political order, about the welfare state and the national security state as they existed at that time. What the Tea Party and Occupy Wall Street have in common is a great distrust of government. And one might say that the government, for which there was a great deal of support from the late 1930s until the late 1960s, has become the object of scorn and derision in the country. And I think this is not limited to social movements like Occupy Wall Street and the Tea Party movement, which is why we're all fascinated by them. I think government has grown so big and complex. Vested interests have become so entrenched in Washington, and this has kind of seeped down to the state governments, that people feel alienated from government in a way that is really unprecedented in modern American politics. So I saw a poll yesterday, and I know you're skeptical about them, properly so, but a lot of polls have shown this, that 75% of the American people feel the country is heading in the wrong direction. And I think what these social movements express, both the Tea Party movement and Occupy Wall Street, as much as they differ, is that we have to take our country back. It seems that the government has become unaccountable. It's like an alien being to us. And I think that is probably the most disturbing trend in contemporary American politics.
Professor Sidney Milk is here on today's Wake Up Call. As we're talking about politics, Sunday before Tuesday's Election Day, please remember to go out and vote. It's important for you to take your vote regardless of which side you happen to cast your ballot.
I'll second that. It's good. As a political scientist.
Well, you know, it doesn't...
Voting is good. As my colleague...
That's right.
Politics is good.
It doesn't do any good to be part of the poll if you're not part of the actual response. Professor, talking about the 2012 presidential race, which we've already mentioned seems to be beginning earlier and earlier. When was the last time? Well, I know that Jimmy Carter, and from the Democratic side, and the first Bush president, neither were elected as incumbents. Historically, how does that play out? Because there are already discussions about, can President Obama win again? I saw a poll that said that Hillary Clinton was a more popular potential candidate on the Democratic side than the current president, Obama. Where does this come across historically, and what might expectations be for how this plays out for the Democratic candidate?
You mean the controversy over some of the resistance to President Obama, both on the Democratic side, not just...
Correct.
Yeah. Well, this is not uncommon. There have been, ever since we developed the primary system, again, we got to go back to those 60s, when the primaries really go back to the turn of the 20th century, but they really become central to presidential politics in the early 1970s. And ever since we've had this way of selecting the candidates for president, it's a more open system than the old party conventions, which we refer to, and which historians refer to by the technical term of smoke-filled rooms. It's a more open process, and so there's always room for kind of insurgent challenge. So the one that comes to mind as I think about President Obama's problems, and some that he might not have, is when President George H.W. Bush ran for re-election in 1988. Pat Buchanan posed a serious challenge to him in the primaries. In fact, did very well in the New Hampshire primaries. That kind of insurgency challenge or challenge from within your party is a good sign that an incumbent is really in trouble.
But
you mentioned Carter. I'm sorry to interrupt. You mentioned professors have a habit of talking. You mentioned Carter. Ted Kennedy's challenge to Carter was a really devastating impact on his reelection attempt.
So, but in that sense, with President Carter and Kennedy, that seems more like what we're talking about here with Hillary Clinton and President Obama, because, and again, I'm not a professor of politics and history.
Stop bragging.
but with Pat Buchanan, that seems more like what we're talking about with the Tea Party now. He was so far away from what H.W. Bush was doing at the time, that to me, again, seems to be more along the lines of the Tea Party. That's the section of the Republicans who felt they were being left out.
Yeah.
As opposed to the Democratic side with Carter and Kennedy seemed to be more of, you've done a crappy job, let another Democrat step in.
Yeah.
Here.
I like the way you put it. It's very interesting. But I wouldn't put it quite that way. I mean, Kennedy was an establishment figure, and he did, in a sense, in the Democratic Party, and he did accuse Carter of doing a crappy job, to use
your own more appropriate language.
That's okay. I like this style of conversation. This is a political conversation, Rick. But what's similar to the Buchanan and Kennedy challenge, as different as those two people are, is they were, in a sense, presuming to stand for the core principles of the movement that supported their party. So Kennedy thought that Carter had strayed from the liberal base too far. He was too much of a centrist and a pragmatist. And similarly, Pat Buchanan's challenge of George H.W. Bush was based on the fact that he had broken his pledge to not pursue any new taxes, the famous read my lips, no new taxes pledge. And so he was, Buchanan was standing for the party faithful, what we call the base. I don't see that kind of challenge developing against President Obama. There is a lot of disaffection on the left, a lot of labor unions, a lot of African Americans are very disappointed in his leadership so far. But I don't see Hillary Clinton challenging him. I think she likes being Secretary of State very much. And also, she's not to the left of President Obama. She, like he, is of a kind of a pragmatic Democrat and very strong on foreign policy. So one of the things President Obama has going for him, and there isn't a whole lot so far in 2012, is there is not a challenge that I see developing from within his own party. So while the Republicans are slicing each and dicing each other up, he will be able to mount, build or revitalize his very important grassroots organization that he used in 2008, and he's kept alive while being president for the 2012 campaign. I think that's a huge factor, Rick.
11:20 here on the Wake Up Call. Our guest today, Professor Sidney Milkus from the University of Virginia, professor of politics, writer of many books. We will start taking phone calls in just a moment. 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. If you need the toll-free number, that's 877-WNRN-ROCKS, 979-0919. Right now, let me give you the markets of Tiger Fuel forecast for Central Virginia and the Shenandoah Valley. Mostly sunny today, highs in the mid-50s. Clear tonight, except in Lynchburg, where they'll have some patchy fog. Lows in the mid-30s, Richmond about 40. And then mostly sunny tomorrow, highs in the mid-60s. Right now, it's 49 in the valley, 49 in Lynchburg, a few clouds in Richmond at 50, and in Charlottesville, 47.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call, brought to you by The Hook and by the Markets of Tiger Fuel, a refreshing pause on your journey to anywhere with locations all over town. Now back to your host, Rick Moore.
And let me thank Blue Ridge Graphics for their support. You can find them at Meade Avenue and East High Street here in Charlottesville. They provide custom T-shirts and sportswear, plus promotional items for schools, organizations, and businesses. That's Blue Ridge Graphics, 434-296-9746. Online, it's brgtshirts.com. All right, back with our guest, Professor Milkus. Professor, we've been talking about sort of the 2012 upcoming election, but just touched on the GOP possibilities. And you mentioned how they've been, I think your phrase was, slicing and dicing one another. How does that affect? I mean, let's go back again historically. Mm-hmm. Are there any similar presidential hopeful races that have had this extensive number? Especially the thing that I find most interesting is how on, you know, and again, these dates aren't appropriate, but July 1st, Michelle Bachmann was on top, and then on July 15th, it was Rick Perry. And it just sort of every 2 or 3 weeks, this changes as to who is, you know, the grandmaster, and then they fall very quickly. Have we had any historical similarities?
I think it's not unusual in one sense, Rick, in that every time it seems that an incumbent is somewhat vulnerable, the Out Party is going to have a pretty vital and contentious race to have the privilege of running against the incumbent. And so I don't, or running against the party that's in power. So, I mean, I think the 2008 election contest in the Democratic Party was, you only had three major candidates, Edwards, Clinton, and Obama, but it was extremely contentious and heated. And part of that was they were the party out of power, and they saw the opportunity. They represented the party out of power, saw the opportunity of whoever was going to win this thing was going to have a good chance to be president. It's not unusual in that sense. It is unusual in two ways, I think. One is you were mentioning before, Rick, how politics, how the presidential elections have started so early. But the Republican contest hasn't started that early. Obama was well, and Obama and Clinton were really had their organizations well developed at this point in the 2008 election. None of the Republican candidates has raised that much money or built their organization that effectively to this point.
No, but isn't that because?
And it's
there are so many of them that sort of the big money folks are standing back waiting to give their money to whom might actually be a potential winner.
That was the second thing I was going to – great minds think alike. The second thing I was going to mention was that it's very different in the sense, particularly in the Republicans, where there's been – they've been pretty well organized, and they kind of rally around a leading candidate. Think of George W. Bush in 2000. But there hasn't been – no one has emerged as a strong front runner. Romney has been the front runner, but because of his liberal bona fides that he won as governor of Massachusetts, the base just does not trust Romney. There's a certain respect for him because he looks like a good candidate who might have the best chance in a practical sense to beat President Obama. But the party faithful who really dominate these primaries is very, very skeptical of him. And they've had a heck of a hard time. And this is why we have a flavor of the month, if you will. They've had a heck of a hard time settling on a conservative alternative to the more pragmatic candidacy of Governor Obama. Of Governor Romney, excuse me.
All right, let's take our first call of the morning. Call, are you with me?
Yes, how are you doing today?
We're well. Name and where are you calling from?
My name is Brandon. I'm calling from North Garden.
All right. Question or comment for Professor Milkus?
What I wanted to call about was the way the process goes these days for getting a candidate for president. I'm not very versed in a lot of these ways, but it just seems like maybe if there was a really important job or for a CEO or something, there would be a bigger process in vetting a candidate to run a company. And from my perspective, it seems like who wants to throw their hat in this ring, or this wrestling ring, or the boxing ring, and whoever's the last man standing gets to be the guy who goes up for president. And I just want to see if there's a better way to get a better leader, candidate, or representative to do the job.
Great question.
Great question.
Thanks, Carl. Thanks.
Yeah, thank you for the question. The analogy I hear a lot is mud wrestling to represent the process. I don't know. It's easy to condemn the process. It's harder to come up with an alternative. Until the early 70s, we had the party leaders who gathered at national conventions and they, although there's oftentimes these would get pretty heated, in a more kind of deliberative way and strategic way, would decide on the ticket for the campaign. But that was attacked in the late 60s for being undemocratic, and we moved to this primary system, which in democracy's not pretty. It represents our humanity, not our salvation. And in a way, what often looks like a very unpleasant athletic event is that's just democracy at work. Now, we could perhaps do some things to make the primary system a little more little less ugly. Get a little bit away from the front loading and have some rules about regional primaries that would give it a little more order. But, gee, it's a lot easier to condemn the process than to come up with alternatives. But it's a great question. It's the kind of thing we should be thinking about.
Yeah. Again, numbers out there for those who want to call and ask a question or make a comment with Professor Milkus, UVA Professor of Politics, as well as Director of Democracy and Governance Studies from the Miller Center here in Charlottesville, 979-0919. 1-877-WNRN-ROCK. That's a toll-free number today with Professor Sid Milkus. Professor, previous question about, how to get in there and the mud wrestling comment that you made. Well, is it the best way to do it to slam the person that you're running against rather than just promote and project yourself. I mean, in the last week or 2 weeks now, we've seen the allegations of sexual harassment against Herman Cain. Cain accused the Perry Group of doing this. The Perry Group said, no, it was more likely the Romney Group. How does this help? Whether you win or lose, wouldn't you want the person from your side of the fence to take the job? And by throwing this information out, aren't you only hurting your own team?
Yeah, that's a very high-minded view of politics, Rick.
Every Sunday, right here, every Sunday.
I think maybe if more people listened to your show, we'd have a more civil process. You know, this negative and positive campaigning is a really a fascinating question. And my preference, because I share your optimistic view of democracy, would be we would have more positive campaigns, and the candidates in the Republican Party now might emphasize the programs they stand for and the leadership qualities they have, rather than attacking their opponents. But unfortunately, a reality of politics is negative campaigning works. There's been a lot of studies of campaigns, and it's a sad fact of political life that this kind of personal attack has an important effect on politics. That all said, if you watch the Republican primaries and debates, they've been really interesting, and there are there has been substantive discussion, and maybe the press needs to focus more on the substantive question. I think the battle right now between, or the battle that did exist between Rick Perry and Governor Romney for a while was quite fascinating to watch. Whereas before, Romney had disavowed his past, his liberal past in Massachusetts, and had embraced the base of the Republican Party. Whereas since Rick Perry has stepped in, there's been a very interesting debate between whether or not the Republicans are best served by a religious commitment to their base issues, or whether they have to be more pragmatic to win the presidency in 2012. Now, I think the media is not focused enough on that, and the saturated coverage of Cain's problems in the last few days has been interesting, but probably has deflected attention from some really important issues that are going on.
Again, Sunday morning wake-up call here on WNRN. Our guest, Professor Sid Milkus, from the University of Virginia. He's a professor of politics, talking about politics on the Sunday before Election Day. Remember to go out and vote. If you'd like to call up, 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS is the toll-free number. Professor, so we talk about whether or not how you should run your campaign. An article, that's not true, a headline that I happened to catch before coming in this morning was that the top GOP presidential hopeful candidates had failed to attend a Tea Party event down in Florida to do their campaigning. What does that say about the way that the election is being run today?
Yeah, I hadn't seen that article, so I can't talk about it with full knowledge. But I think what's going on now between the Tea Party and the the Republican Party and the Occupy Wall Street movement and the Democratic Party is kind of a mating dance. Both parties recognize that they can gain a great deal of energy from those movements, and perhaps foot soldiers that can help them in the campaign. At the same time, it's a little bit like, I've heard this analogy, it's a little like being the lead character in the Hurt Locker, that if you pull the wrong wire, they can explode on you. So those movements provide energy and potential foot soldiers you need for a campaign. At the same time, they can tar you as too extreme and in such a way that could hurt you in an election. So some of the candidates in both parties have embraced them, but most are kind of engaged in this very careful mating strategy. So they want to in a sense, connect with them, but not become fully identified with them.
It sounds like some cultures where the parents decide who is going to marry whom.
Yeah, I wish I had that kind of power over my children.
let me thank L. Oppelmans for their support today. L. Oppelmans, Central Virginia's complete music headquarters, continuously operated since 1890 at 909 Main Street in downtown Lynchburg. L. Oppelmans Music Department now featuring acoustic guitars and banjos, mandolins and violins, as well as electric guitar packages and complete drum sets. L. Oppelman, 909 Main Street, Lynchburg. Online, loppelman.com. Professor, let's go back to a little bit about trends for a minute, political trends. The size of the voter turnout in 2008 was considered to be so large that it had a definitive, definitive impact on the results.
Yeah, yeah.
And in fact, many people would say that if there had been a smaller turnout, that the outcome would have been reversed. True? And if so, well, whether or not true, what happens in 2012 where a lesser output is expected?
Yeah, I do think that's a really great question, Rick. I think a key to President Obama's victory in 2008 was the phenomenal grassroots organization he put together that mobilized young people, African Americans, Hispanics, and suburbanites who were attracted to his candidacy. And that mobilization was absolutely critical to his not only winning the election, but winning rather decisively. This was also the case, if I can say so quickly, in 2004, when President Bush's reelection seemed in doubt. He similarly put together a very good grassroots organization that mobilized people to support him. What was particularly significant about that campaign is they very carefully targeted people who would vote Republican but were unlikely to vote without some kind of personal appeal on the ground by an organization. And they did a very good job of mobilizing support for President Bush that way.
But they did that because of, if I'm correct, because they were, was it abortion topics in certain states? Or
there was same-sex marriage.
Same-sex marriage.
Yeah.
And so they picked particular states that needed the turnout, like Ohio, et cetera, had people go out to vote for that same-sex marriage issue. And while they were there, go ahead and vote for President Bush.
Yes, there was some of that, but it went beyond that because the key to that campaign was I'm not denying the importance of same-sex marriage. It's a very important issue. But the key to that campaign was Homeland Security. And the Iraq War, and the campaign and the personal appeals that the grassroots organization engaged in emphasized President Bush as a strong leader in the war on terror. And it's interesting, Rick, that one of their most successful initiatives in that campaign was to get more women to vote for President Bush. And if you look at the difference between 2000 and 2004, that's where Bush made his most important improvements is in the vote of women, who didn't shift completely over to him, but they a substantial part of women, a much greater number of women voted for him in 2004 than in 2000.
11:38 here on the Wake Up Call. Our guest today, Professor Sidney Milkus.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake Up Call, brought to you by the Markins of Tiger Fuel and by The Hook, an innovative weekly on newsstands every Thursday. Now here's Rick with what you can find in this week's Hook.
And in The Hook this week, jurors from the Eric Abscher trial discuss their ruling for murder. Should the proposed Western bypass include bike or pedestrian access? And are those requests realistic? And it's the traditional book versus the Kindle. Which one wins the battle? The Hook, fresh and new every Thursday. And support today also coming from the UVA Corner's Culinary Secret at the end of Elliewood Avenue, The Backyard. The Backyard has a seasonal menu, daily specials, and a rotating list of beers on tap. The Backyard now open on Sundays, serving brunch and then a pub food menu until close. For more information, call them 202-8215, online, thebackyarduva.com, or visit them on their Facebook page. Professor Milkus, talking about the trends and the turnout, but what's the expectation for 2012? We were talking about 2004, 2008, and how those were, but let's look forward a year.
My guess is that the turnout is going to be pretty substantial in 2012. So we saw a jump in 24 and a little more of a jump in 2008, and I think the turnout in 2012 will be at least as great as it was in those two elections, because I think, Rick, that so much is at stake in this election. Through all the mud wrestling we've been watching, I think what is emerging is a campaign that will raise the issue. And in a way, I think, this is a little dramatic, but it's good once in a while for professors to be dramatic. And I want to make a dramatic historical point. I think we are going to have a debate about the government and the role it should play in 2012 in a way that we have not seen since the 1930s, when in the teeth of the Great Depression, there was a debate about whether government should play an important role in protecting individual men and women from the terrifying uncertainties of the marketplace. I think the answer that came out of Franklin Roosevelt and the New Deal was, yes, it should. And that has held up for a long time. It's been challenged some in a fundamental way since Ronald Reagan was president. But I think in 2012, we're going to have a debate about this in a way that really reopens the question in a way that has not been so for a long, long time. And for a political scientist, now this is kind of scary maybe for a normal person like you, Rick, but for a political scientist, we live for these kind of elections. So I find I can't think of a time that's been more fun to talk about politics.
Professor Sidney Milkus here in the studio today, getting all hyped.
I'm getting hyped.
call us up if you have a question or a comment, 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS is the toll-free number. Brother, so you talk about that discussion upcoming. But again, as a political professor, is it going to matter? I mean, you seem to think that it will, but the discussion has been had possibly on a lesser level, and it can be had in 99%, and I don't use that in the Occupy Wall Street manner, but it can be had in 99% of the population to say yes or no. But then once we get to Washington, D.C., the vote is 50-50 and nothing, and there is no winning side. It seems that for the past, whether you want to say 4 years or 40 years, that it is just, blocking heads against one another, because some people say, well, I believe this, and the others say, I believe this, and this has been, I would think, part of the polls that we talked about at the beginning of the show. This is why the American public believes that Washington, D.C. has walled himself off. If you go to small-town America, where the Republican banker and the Democratic farmer may disagree, but they have to work together to reach their accomplishments. And, by the way, I copied that off NPR. and in Washington, D.C., the two different sides don't actually work together to reach the accomplishment that works for everyone else.
Yeah, it's a really interesting question, and there's no perfect correspondence between elections and government. In fact, the government was set up that way. We have separation of powers that makes sure that there's no exact translation. But from time to time, and political scientists get juiced like I am right now, because it seems like we have an election that is decisive. Now, when President Obama was elected in 2008 in the teeth of the Great Recession, a lot of people thought, here it is. This is one of these really critical elections, and this is going to revive progressivism, and we're going to see a new era of progressive politics embodied by things by a major healthcare law and a new foreign policy. And that didn't happen for a couple of reasons. One, I think, is President Obama has been more pragmatic than a lot of his followers thought he would be, and he hasn't pushed it as militantly as they might have hoped. The more important reasons, what you mentioned, is strong opposition developed against it, and there is kind of what seems to be gridlock in Washington now. I think, and I certainly could be wrong about this in spite of being a professor of politics. I prefer to call myself a professor of politics and a political professor. But I think I can be wrong about this, but I think 2012 is going to be more decisive. This is, in a sense, a referendum on President Obama's first term. And to put it in very concrete terms, Rick, if the Republicans win, there will be a strong effort to repeal the national health care law that was passed in 2009. If President Obama is reelected, that law will be extended and embedded in American politics, and it'll become an enduring part of our political and our political life. So just looking at it that concretely, I think this is an extremely important election, important follow-up to the initial battle that we saw in 2008.
You mentioned the President Obama and how that was sort of the expectation was sort of falls back in comparison to 1912 and the Progressive Party. That's one of your books, Theodore Roosevelt, The Progressive Party and the Transformation of American Democracy. I believe that might even be your most recent.
It is my most recent book. Yeah, thank you. Thank you for I won't even ask
can
you.
Can you find it on Amazon?
You can certainly find it on Amazon.
And by the way, it's Milkis, M-I-L-K-I-S.
Yes. And I have one child going to college and a son in law school, so I would really deeply honor
right.
you.
So buy two.
Please, buy
one
two.
One for yourself,
please,
one
please,
for a
please,
Christmas
please.
Gift.
Yeah.
But again, you mentioned how the expectations were that this was a great presidential race of great importance, and it hasn't quite lived up to that, at least not yet. Again, it's always different for presidents who have two terms rather than one term.
Yeah.
But how does the 2008 and the 2012 election go back to 1912 and the Progressive Party, which seems to be sort of non-existent today, even by not just by two words, Progressive Party, but almost by fundamental, you know, management. We don't have progressives anymore, except in a very small percentage, do we?
Wow, that's a hard question. I could read my book. it would take us beyond our hour that we have. What's so interesting about 1912 to me is that you have the emergence of a really strong third party. The challenge is the two existing Democratic and Republican parties for being indifferent to the crises caused by the Industrial Revolution, the way that had created hardship for many American people and had led to the exploitation of many workers. And the Progressive Party didn't win. It won 27.4% of the vote. I noticed that 0.4. This is something I studied in great detail. But it had an enduring impact on American politics. This is the launching of the kind of politics that emerged victorious in the wake of the Great Depression. Franklin D. Roosevelt is a second cousin of Theodore Roosevelt, is I think, best seen as kind of the successor to that Progressive Party campaign and kind of embeds it in the Democratic Party in the 1930s. One of the things that's missing now, you mentioned before, I think, Rick, that a lot of people are disenchanted with both parties right now. And one of the things
I think you can find that on any poll.
On any poll, yeah. Even if we're skeptical about polls,
that's right.
You and I are going to accept that. And one of the things that has not emerged is a strong third party to challenge the two existing parties, the Democratic and Republican parties, as presently constituted. I think that the Occupy Wall Street movement, in particular, expresses a disenchantment with both parties, a disaffection with both parties. The Tea Party movement is more sympathetic to the Republican Party. Now, whether that will emerge eventually as something like a third party that challenges the way things are remains to be seen. But one of the interesting things to me, Rick, so I'm glad you took me back 100 years, is that we haven't had a strong movement in recent years or third party to challenge the way things are going on. And that's really interesting. It's a puzzle for professors of politics or political professors.
So you don't count the Independent Party from 1992?
the Ross Perot.
Ross Perot group.
Yeah,
thank you. All I could picture was a small guy with a weird laugh.
We could spend a whole hour talking about H. Ross Perot. That wasn't a party. That was H. Ross Perot challenging the Democratic and Republican candidates. It was not a full blown party with a complete ticket of candidates. It was H. Ross Perot who had $60 million
to
spend on that campaign. Yeah, yeah.
All right, 11:49, our guest today, Professor Sidney Milkus, UVA, Professor of Politics, also Director of Democracy from the Miller Center of Public Affairs. Let me remind you that at noon we will have Drew Thompson here for Les Temps Perdue, best of 80s and 90s alternative music. He might play Moby or the Feelies, Pearl Jam, brought to you in part by Caliente. Requests always welcome on Les Temps Perdue. All right, just about 10 minutes left with our guest today. Professor, and I have my notes here, and I want to make sure we get into it. Kane versus Allen, right here in Virginia, filling a spot that a senator after one term gave up.
Yeah, Senator Webb.
That in itself seems unusual, and so with your political history, you can maybe tell us how that works in a national manner. And then the importance of this race.
Yeah, I think it's one of the really important Senate races that'll take place in 2012. It's not that unusual for an incumbent to only want to serve one term. I think since senators serve 6-year terms, you know, think if they were in the House, that's 3 already. But I do think Senator Webb leaving the Senate is an indication. Back to our mud wrestling analogy, things have gotten so nasty in Washington, and Senator Webb is one of those people who likes to work across the aisle. It's gotten so darn hard. And if you look at people who have left politics, like Senator By in Indiana is also another example, a lot of it has to do with the fact that in Washington the parties are so polarized that those who like to work with both parties find it extremely difficult to do so. So that's not that unusual. I think this is one of these bellwether elections, and I think they're both good candidates. I think Kane and Allen are both terrific candidates. Allen's image was certainly tarnished by his 2006 campaign. We won't go into that in 10 minutes, but I think they're both good candidates. It's going to be a great race. We're not really paying attention to it now because of the very important elections Tuesday you rightfully refer to. I think it's going to come down to what happens, on the national level. If you look at Virginia in recent years, it's followed national trends. It's become one of those states, like Maine used to be, that really gives us a sense of what's gone on in the nation. So Webb beat Allen in 2006 when things were moving in the Democrats' direction, and McDonnell won in 2009 because of things were going against the Democrats. And I'm not sure. So I'm not sure. We'll have to see how things turn out over the next year. Governor Kane has a very close relationship with President Obama. He was head of the Democratic National Committee until he decided to run for this race where President Obama put him. And so I think his fortunes sort of are tied to what's going to happen with the president. The president thinks Virginia is extremely important. He's put his best team, his A team, in Virginia to mobilize for his own campaign and also to help campaign. You know, this is probably simplifying things, Rick, but I think it depends in large part on the economy. If the economy doesn't improve or gets worse between now and the election, it's hard for me to see how Kane could win. If we can see some sign that the economy's heading in the right direction, if it could drop, if unemployment would drop even to 8.5 or 8% from 9, where it is right now, then I think Kane would have, and the president would have a decent chance of winning Virginia.
You talk about the economy. Does it increase or decrease the turnout when you're in an area where there is so much money spent on an election? When you read the headlines about, and again, making up numbers, that candidate A has raised, you know, $80 million and has spent $60 million of it already, and candidate B has similar, and you just sit back there reading the paper or watching the television going, that is revolting. Here I am having a difficult time paying my monthly bills. Does that make you want to go vote because it's so important? Or does that make you just want to crawl up and say, all of those people are awful and I'm not going to participate in people who waste their money while I can't make mine.
Yeah, it could go either way. I certainly hope we have a big turnout in 2012. But your point, your question, Rick, points to the things we've been talking about for the last hour, is that a lot of people are disaffected. They're pissed off, and sometimes being pissed off makes you, energizes you and gets you out to the polls, and sometimes it just alienates you and you stay home. I think it depends on how the money's spent. If it's spent on the airwaves and negative campaigning, I think that might have a dampening effect on 2012, no matter how important the issue. Will we retain the health care law that was passed in 2009? If it's put into grassroots organizations like it was in 2004 and 2008, and the candidates kind of combined a kind of high-tech identification of voters that they want to mobilize, and door-to-door canvassing, I think then we could have a high turnout. I suspect that a lot of money is going to be put into grassroots organization. I see trends along those lines already. And so I'm sort of optimistic that we're going to have a substantial turnout in 2012. But I think your concerns are really worth taking very, very seriously.
It is 11:55 here on the Wake Up Call. This is WNRN Charlottesville and WNRS-FM Sweetbriar Amherst Lynchburg. Just a few minutes left with our guest today, Professor Sidney Milkus, Professor of Politics at the University of Virginia. Professor, you talked about trends for a moment. As certain factors in political races, let me say gender, ethnicity, I would assume that those have had an increasing impact on an election. What do you see in terms of 2012 or even further down the line? We mentioned Bush going after the women in 2004.
He also did better among Hispanics in 2004 than Republicans had in 2000. Supported a very reform-oriented immigration policy.
What greater impact do you see fragments of our entire community playing in a race?
Yeah. I think, you know, one of the wild cards, Rick, in recent American politics has been the Hispanic voter. I think President Obama's election certainly had a lot to do with his mobilization of the African-American vote. You know, people not only supported him, everybody got him to turn out in large numbers, but Hispanics were just as important. And the growth of the Hispanic population really makes them they're an important part of the future of American politics. They're very important, but so far neither party has effectively incorporated them into their base. The Republican Party has moved away from George W. Bush's commitment to taking a kind of a reform stance on immigration. And I think that might hurt them considerably in the 2012 election if President Obama can mobilize Hispanics as he did in 2008. And that's a big if, because President Obama has not fought for immigration reform as strongly as Hispanic leaders think he should have. And you alluded to this before, Rick. Even though he doesn't have a challenge from his own party in 2008, a lot of people on the left are disappointed with him. In a way, it was inevitable they would have some. A lot of people thought he was the Messiah, and so he was doomed to disappoint some expectations. But because he's a little more pragmatic and a centrist than people expected, I think there's a real question about whether he'll be able to mobilize this very important constituency of Hispanics for him in 2012 the way he was able to in 2008. It did not work in 2010.
Well, we talk about the Hispanics, and again, Professor Milkus here just for the last minute or two on the program. You talk about the GOP presidential hopefuls. Within themselves, they can't decide. They have, you know, a great big wall going up.
Right.
But those who are in America can have free education, et cetera. And if you do that in Texas for a Mr. Perry, then everyone slams you.
Exactly.
That seems to be a big issue. It doesn't matter whether you vote Republican or Democrat or whom you might be considering, that is out there every day.
Yeah. I mean, I think that is a fantastic question. And, you know, clearly the biggest issue in the 2012 is going to be the economy. But I think the position that the Republicans are taking on immigration, this anti-immigration policy or this desire to build walls to protect us is both politically unsound or risky and also goes against a deep-rooted commitment in the country to the importance of immigrants in revitalizing our culture throughout our history.
All right. Our time's up. Professor Milkus, thank you so much.
Hey, it's been fun.
Can we get you to come back in the future?
I'd love it.
Good.
I love it.
Yes, it's nice when I don't alienate the guests the first time on their
Not too much. Not too much.
Thank you very much. Next week, we'll be talking about the Innocence Project with one of the groups here in the University of Virginia Law School. Thank you so much.
This has been your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news on Newsstands Thursday, and by Tiger Fuel, serving the Charlottesville area with home heating oil and propane, Exxon gasoline, and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the management, staff, or board of WNRN. You can contact Rick at abstractme@AOL.com or at wakeupcall@WNRN.org. The wake-up call is produced by Sean McCord. Tune in again next Sunday morning at 11 for the Wake Up Call, only on WNRN.